Famed author and social critic Noam Chomsky addressed a large crowd at the Church of Good Shepherd in Watertown, Massachusetts on Saturday, December 5th. The focus of this presentation was Gaza 1 year later. This event was originally to be held at the Elliott Church in Newton, but that church caved to the local Jewish community, who they perceived would be upset with a pro-Palestinian event. Even with the venue changed just 2 days prior, the hall was packed to capacity. Appearing with Noam Chomsky was Nancy Murray, longtime activist on Middle East and constitutional rights issues, and president of the Gaza Mental Health Foundation. Ms. Murray recently returned from Gaza. She talked about the destitute and desperation that Palestinians live under, referring to Gaza as the world's largest prison. Yet she ended on a note of encouragement, urging people to get involved by supporting the upcoming Gaza Freedom March to help break the siege.
In late December, to mark the first anniversary of Israel's war, 1,100 internationals from 41 countries will be entering Gaza through Rafah to participate with Gazan civil society in a huge Gaza Freedom March calling for an end to the siege. Among them will be an 85-year-old American Holocaust survivor, Hedy Epstein, the acclaimed writer, Alice Walker, Ronnie Casserles, who was a close associate of Nelson Mandela's in the South African liberation struggle, and 10 people from the greater Boston area. It is now too late for you to register for the march itself, but you can give generously to ensure its success. And later on, I hope you will write checks to Code Pink Greater Boston, which will help us really build this march into a tremendous, visually exciting force, which will, we hope, be on the radar of the entire world. You can also sign up on the sheet at the back of the room to get involved in the supportive activities we are holding in Boston before and after the march, including lobbying our elected officials and taking part in our own Gaza Freedom March and vigil on first night. And finally, you can sign a letter to Senator Kerry, which will be passed around during the Q&A session. Now, you may be aware that the senator went to Gaza shortly after the end of Operation Cast Lead. People there told me how impressed they were by his warmth and empathy. He also apparently went around without a bodyguard. People were very impressed. In his capacity as chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, he can play a pivotal role in what I was repeatedly told was the most critical issue facing the Gaza Strip: the breakdown of the sewage and water systems and the contamination of the water supply, with the immediate result that Gaza's babies are dying of nitrate poisoning. You just have to smell the now empty beaches, where 80 million cubic liters of raw sewage are being deposited every day, to know how urgent this issue is. The letter asks Kerry to secure a government waiver that will permit USAID and other NGOs to engage with the Gaza Coastal Municipal Water Utility. At present, they can't do that. They have no relations with the essential water utility, which is going to fix, if it ever gets fixed, the water and sewage supplies, because it includes Hamas members. This waiver would allow it to have some kind of interface with that authority. And the letter also asks Kerry to facilitate the entry of critically needed water and sanitation supplies, which are currently stranded at the border because of the blockade. It's all ready to go, but it can't get in. So please do sign the letter when it is passed around, and sign to get up to get involved in Gaza Freedom March activities, as well as giving generally to the march itself. We have to all work together here and around the world to end this terrible blockade, and together I think we can. Thank you.
Nancy Murray with the Gaza Mental Health Foundation speaking last Saturday in Watertown. This event was sponsored by Newton Dialogue for Peace and War, Boston Coalition for Palestinian Rights, Code Pink Greater Boston, Jewish Women for Justice in Israel-Palestine, and others. Noam Chomsky then addressed the crowd. He started by setting up a framework for which his presentation was based.
Well, let me begin with two caveats. pitfalls that I think we should be careful to avoid. It's very important to have this meeting about Gaza, one of the most disgraceful situations in the world. But we should remember that it's only in U.S. and Israeli policy that Gaza is separated from the West Bank. They're a unity, one unit, what's left of Palestine, 22% of the original mandate. Now, it's very important for the U.S. and Israel to separate the two and isolate them. For one thing, that means if there ever is some kind of a political settlement, the West Bank will be deprived of any access to the outside world. It'll be imprisoned. It won't have a seaport. It'll essentially be contained by two enemies. So there is a strategic reason for the longstanding and intense effort to distinguish Gaza and the West Bank, to keep them apart, to ban transport, and also kind of ideologically to make them seem as if they're two different places. They aren't, outside of U.S.-Israeli ideology, and we should be careful not to to resist that, I think. Another division that I think it's important to resist is between U.S. and Israel. Now, we constantly talk, rightly, about Israeli crimes, but that's highly misleading because they are U.S.-Israeli crimes. There's nothing that Israel does that goes beyond what the United States authorizes and, in fact, directly supports with economic, diplomatic, military, and also ideological support, that is, by framing issues. So these are U.S.-Israeli crimes. If we talk about Israel, we should remember we're talking about ourselves. It's not like talking about crimes of China. These are very important to keep in mind. Now, turning to Gaza and the West Bank, the separation of Gaza and the West Bank is part of a much more general policy, a policy of fragmentation of the residue of Palestine, so that it cannot hope to emerge as a viable entity. Separating Gaza from the West Bank is one part of it. Gaza, as Nancy pointed out, has been converted into a prison. The screws are being steadily tightened so that it becomes a maximum security prison, something like Guantanamo. It's kind of a little odd on the side that there's been so much horror in the United States about Guantanamo. It's not very different from the maximum security prisons that the United States runs, and we're unique in the world, in the Western world, in having an incarceration system of this kind. So it's not just becoming a prison, it's becoming something like a maximum security prison, which is basically a torture chamber. It's under constant siege, a very harsh and brutal siege. A siege is an act of war. Of all countries in the world, Israel surely is unusual in recognizing that. It twice launched a war, 56 and 67, on the grounds that its access to the outside world was very partially restricted. That was considered a crime, and total siege is, of course, a much greater crime. So it's a major war crime that we're carrying out.
Noam Chomsky, speaking at the Church of Good Shepherd in Watertown. He then went on to discuss specific details of the struggle between Palestine and Israel, including the right of self-defense and the annexation wall.
Whatever a state does, there's a pretext, security. Whatever you do, it's in self-defense, kind of by definition. And as usual, in this case, the pretext doesn't stand up to a moment's scrutiny. So take, say, the annexation wall. I mean, if the reason that's offered is defense, you know, security. I mean, if the concern were security, we know exactly what would be done. The wall would be built on the international border. It could be made impregnable, you know, patrolled on both sides, you know, a mile high, totally secure, and that would give security. But, of course, if the purpose is what it actually is, namely to steal land and resources, then it can't be built on the international border, where it might furthermore inconvenience Israelis instead of just inconveniencing and, in fact, stealing from Palestinians. And the same is true of the attack on Gaza. It's almost universally accepted here, and in the West generally, that Israel had a right of self-defense and therefore was justified in attacking Gaza even though the attack was maybe disproportionate. That's accepted, for example, by the Goldstone Report. The Goldstone Report is a very valuable account of the atrocities that were carried out in the course of the war, but they're regarded as disproportionate actions in a legitimate war of self-defense. Well, if you think about it for a minute, there is indeed a right of self-defense. Sure, everyone agrees to that. But there is no right of self-defense by force. Now, that has to be argued. And there's extensive international law and just common sense on this. You do not have the right to use force in self-defense unless you have exhausted peaceful means. Well, in this case, there definitely were peaceful means. The U.S. and Israel knew it, and they chose not to even attempt them because they wanted a war. They wanted to attack. The peaceful means were obvious, again, not controversial. There had been a ceasefire initiated the preceding June 2008. Israel concedes officially that during the ceasefire there was not a single Hamas rocket fired. Sderot was quiet. The ceasefire was broken on November 4th when, using the cover of the U.S. election, Israel invaded the Gaza Strip, killed half a dozen Hamas activists, and then rockets started firing. In the following month, Hamas offered repeatedly to reinstate the ceasefire. Israel acknowledged it, cabinet discussed it, decided not to accept it. So the attack itself was a criminal act. The U.S. and Israel are guilty of outright aggression, and if they fired one bullet, it was a crime, and if they carried out the atrocities that they did, it was a crime. And if you look case by case, there's virtually no justification for the claim of security.
Noam Chomsky. As was mentioned earlier, this event had to be moved from Newton to Watertown. During the question period, Professor Chomsky was asked about American Jewish involvement in the Justice for Palestine. He talked about the progress that has been made, but also used the question to point out the forced change in venue.
There have been very notable changes. There are very scattered exceptions, like the town of Newton happens to be off the continent. It's the one place which is totally berserk if you try to say the word Palestine. But outside of Newton, it's very hard to find a place that where you can't have meetings like this. And it's changed very notably in the past, even the past few years. Many years ago, say 10 years ago, at MIT where I teach, meetings where, say, an Israeli dissident would speak or I would speak had to have police protection. I'd have police protection to go back to the car, If I was on campus somewhere, say UCLA or something, giving philosophy lectures, it's a real case, and one talk of the many I gave was on Palestine, the university police insisted on accompanying me every minute I was on campus, in a philosophy seminar, for example. And it wasn't a joke, they were picking up serious threats of probably the kind that the LA Church got. Serious enough to be worried about. They don't want people murdered on the campus and that sort of thing. But that's changed notably. In fact, by now, especially after, even before Gaza, but after Gaza, there was a dramatic change. It's now at the point where you talk to a general audience, a university or public, you really have to try to encourage people who defend Israeli practices, and you have to sympathize with them and encourage them to be willing to stand up and speak. Because the atmosphere is intimidating. Everybody disagrees. Well, that's kind of like what was happening with South Africa in the early 60s. Took a little longer in the United States, but happened here too. And yes, that's developing, and the Jewish community is part of it. So if you look at polls, or even if you look at bloggers, there's been a significant change. There are things like, J Street, the alternative lobby, which goes a little distance. There are other groups like Jewish Voices for Peace, Tzedek V'Shalom, others, which are springing up and getting a lot of support and saying, yes, we ought to protect human rights and international law, not just blindly support the state that we're supposed to worship. So let's depart from a kind of a Stalinist loyalty to the holy state and care for honest, decent principles. That's very notably changing.
Noam Chomsky, speaking on December 5th in Watertown, Massachusetts, on Gaza 1 year later. The entire recording of this event can be heard online at radioforall.net. For the Boston Community Reporters Project, I am Chuck Rosina.